Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. Today is Thursday, March 13th. It's a couple of minutes after 9 a.m. We have with us, Senator Olson is excused, Chairman Stedman, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick. We expect Senator Kronk, Senator Kaufman is present. We have a quorum to do business today. We have two items on our agenda. First, we will be hearing from the Legislative Finance Division. They will provide agency's response to the previous committee questions and present an update to the three-year outlook that we've had presentations on in the past. And then we will be hearing from much-anticipated spring revenue forecast from the Department of Revenue. So with that come forward, please, and proceed. Identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Painter, Alexi. Alexi Painter.
For the record, Alexi Painter, legislative fiscal analyst. So I have two new slides that are responses to requests from the committee, and then there's a couple of slides for context before that I'll go over pretty quickly. Just the context here, the question was to see the House scenarios that they had presented that we brought over in this committee with, instead of reflecting the original version of HB 269 as it was introduced by the Rules Committee, reflecting the CS that included an amendment that added about $22 million. You can see the cost of that bill here in the second line here. And so that's $22 million higher than what was in the version as presented to the House Finance Committee. And so we're updating that on one of the future slides. The other update relates to Medicaid. So the House scenario and the original Senate scenarios had assumed that agency operations grow at 2.5% inflationary growth. Based on the long-term Medicaid projection called the MESA report, there's an expectation that Medicaid will grow by 4.5% over the next couple of decades. And that was built into the updated Senate scenarios, but not into the scenarios that the House presented. So the Senate Finance Chairs asked us to incorporate that into the long-term model for the, or the three-year model for the House scenarios. And that's that bottom bar there, or the lower version, where it goes up by an additional $31 million in FY 28.
So, I'll hold my questions till later.
Okay. And so, just a reminder on what this Senate finance budget scenario is. So it's trying to envision what the final FY 26 budget could look like. And, you know, one of the items we updated was the contract placeholder. We updated that from $30 to $40 million. We've seen, I think, three of the contracts were part of the governor's amendments that were submitted yesterday, and we expect six more to come in before the end of session. So that we can kind of keep updating that placeholder as we go, but it's not going to be a for sure number until we get all six in. And then, so this is the Senate scenario for reference, which shows a $680 BSA increase and a 75-25 permanent fund dividend, so 25% of market value, paying about $1,400 per recipient. And then the House scenario, the House Finance Co-Chair asked for five different PFD scenarios. The Senate Co-Chairs had asked to show the committee scenario five, which is a balanced budget permanent fund dividend. The remaining scenarios you can see on that March 5th House Finance Committee meeting is a meeting document. And so this is the original version that we presented in the House Finance Committee and that I presented again in this committee on Monday. And it shows a $1,000 BSA increase and then the PFD needed to balance the budget. That works out to about $736 per recipient based on our projection, resulting in a balanced budget in FY26 under the fall forecast. Obviously, the next presentation will show that that scenario would have a $70 million deficit.
Can you remind the committee what the dividend was last year?
Mr. Chairman, last year the dividend was a combination of an energy relief payment and a permanent fund dividend. So the dividend portion itself was a 75-25 dividend, and the combined effect was a dividend of $1,700, and I think 1702 exactly.
So basically this, in comparison, this is $1,000 less than what every man, woman, and child received from the state in a dividend last year.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And so slide 8 is the change to this scenario that was requested by the chairs of this committee. So this is taking that scenario that the House developed and then making the changes that are highlighted here on slide on line 5, increasing the foundation formula increase to match the Rules Committee CS. The amendments that the other body passed on the floor, I don't believe will have a major fiscal effect, so this should be pretty close to the version adopted by the House, but I don't think there's fiscal notes for all the things that were added in there, but it's a $1,000 BSA increase plus the $22 million addition was for reading incentive grants, providing additional funding for students who are either proficient in reading or who are making progress towards proficiency. So the result of that is it reduces the balanced budget PFD because it adds $22 million to the budget, so it pulls it down a bit under $500 million for the appropriation to about $700 per recipient.
So we're going to be hearing from the Department of Revenue next, and whatever that presentation reflects, we'd ask your office to update this report, whatever the new forecast, spring forecast will be to this committee.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to bring that back to this committee.
Are there any additional questions or comments that members might have?
So we'll go on to the long-term or the three-year version. So first, the Senate finance version that the committee has already seen. So that includes the existing statewide items plus a placeholder for new school bond debt. It includes agency operations and capital budget growing with inflation except for Medicaid. And then there's also an additional placeholder for the Marine Highway in FY28 to replace federal funds that we assume to expire at that point. And there's a $50 million placeholder for the supplemental budget starting FY26. So again, this is showing a $680 BSA increase in the 75-25 PFD. It results in deficits after supplementals of just over $400 million in FY26 and then growing to over $600 million by FY28. Okay, seeing no questions, I'll keep going. So this next scenario shows the House Finance original scenario with the balanced budget. And note that we're balancing before supplementals, so it balances. And then with fund transfers, that amount balances out. But then when you add supplementals, it goes to a $50 million deficit per year. When you're doing a balanced budget dividend, it's hard to anticipate supplementals. So unless you build in $50 million, then we would assume that that results in deficit spending. And so that shows that $746 dividend dropping over the next couple of years. And again, this is with the scenarios presented to the House, and then we'll show in the next slide the modified scenario.
And I might point out that line 11 shows the dividend continuing to decline, and in out years, I would assume that in a decade or so, it's going to be negligible or completely eliminated. In talking with members of both sides of the in the House and the Senate, and Republicans and Democrats, there is a strong desire to have the permanent fund dividend continue. The exact number of legislators is undetermined at this point, but there is interest, a strong interest in seeing the dividend continue in some capacity.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the final scenario I have is the modifications requested by the co-chairs. that adds in agency operations the higher cost for the K-12 bill, and then also the faster growth in Medicaid, so 4.5% instead of 2.5%. And that collectively reduces the amount of the balanced budget PFD. So instead of the higher number we saw on the previous slide is the $700 in FY26, about the same in FY27, dropping to about $450 in FY28.
Any questions on this slide? Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, do we have any idea how much we've paid to the federal government out of the PFDs?
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, I believe the numbers I've seen are about 15 to 20%. The numbers were before the federal tax bill of 2017, the last version, so you know, maybe a little lower than that era, although it depends on what happens on the federal level here, but somewhere in the order of 15 to 20%.
Thank you.
Further questions? Please proceed.
All right, Mr. Chairman, that was my last slide, and I'm happy to turn it over to the Department of Revenue for more good news.
So it's clear in the direction that Scenario 5 gives the state of Alaska, and that gives, I think, some concern to me as and to other members regarding the PFD. So with that, thank you, Mr. Painter. And after we receive the spring update, we expect another update from your office. With that, we'll go to the second item on our agenda, which is a presentation by Commissioner Crum, the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and Dan Stickle, the Chief Economist for the Department of Revenue. Please come forward and identify yourself for the record and proceed with your much anticipated presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Adam Crum, the Commissioner for the Department of Revenue. We're going to hear today to present the Spring 2025 Revenue Forecast. Earlier in session, we did work out with Mr. Chair the time frame along with OMB of when we released this so that the legislature had this information with enough time to continue working throughout the rest of session. I'll be brief in my remarks and then pass it off to Chief Economist Dan Stickle, but grateful for the Economic Research Group and their team putting this together with a lot of kind of turbulent numbers that we are processing. The top line, though, is that the unrestricted general fund forecast for FY25 is essentially unchanged from the fall forecast, as slightly higher expected petroleum revenues are offset by slightly lower revenues from other sources. The division, driven by the revised outlook, the UGF revenue for FY26 has decreased by $70 million. So those are the top line items, and Mr. Stickle will go through the rest in detail, sir.
Mr. Stickle.
For the record, Dan Stickle, Chief Economist with the Department of Revenue. So the outline of the presentation is basically similar to the presentation that we came and delivered to you back in January for the fall revenue forecast, just updated with all of the new numbers for the spring revenue forecast. Before I jump into that, I do want to give a shout out to my team and the research group, as well as our colleagues over at Department of Natural Resources and several other departments. In an attempt to provide the most timely and accurate information possible, we incorporated actual information through the end of February. So there's been a lot of work and a lot of long days and weekends by a lot of people in the background that don't get to sit up here at the table. So just a thank you to all of you. You know who you are. Slide 2, agenda for the presentation, once again broken out into the three sections. So we start with some background and key assumptions for the spring revenue forecast. Then we walk through the forecast itself, starting with total state revenue and then diving into the unrestricted general fund component. And then the final section of the presentation is the detailed assumptions around the petroleum revenue forecast. Starting with that background and key assumptions on slide 4, so the spring forecast was released yesterday on March 12th, and that is an update to the larger revenue sources book that we publish each fall. The revenue sources book, the spring forecast, and forecasts going back several decades are all available on our website at tax.alaska.gov. Slide 5, diving into the key assumptions behind the spring revenue forecast. Once again, this is one scenario within a range of uncertainty. There's been volatility in the markets so far this month and recently. That is something that we always want to point out, that it's a scenario within a range of uncertainty. In terms of investment revenue, for the revenue forecast, we incorporated actual returns through the end of January. And then beyond January, we assumed a 7.9% annual return for the permanent fund for the remainder of this current fiscal year, and then a 7.65% annual return assumption for fiscal year 26 and beyond. The federal revenue forecast incorporated all known funding as of the beginning of this month. Obviously, there's some uncertainty and discussion there, but that's we use the latest possible information that was available to Office of Management and Budget, and assumed that that federal revenues would grow consistent with inflation beyond for fiscal year 27 and beyond. For the oil and gas revenue forecast, the North Slope oil price of $74.48 per barrel was used for fiscal year 2025. Again, that includes 7 months of actuals and then 5 months of projection for the remainder of the fiscal year. And then we assume a $68 oil price for fiscal year 2026. On the non-petroleum side of things, the forecast is predicated on a stable and growing economy. We are assuming continued strong tourism numbers at about 1.6 million cruise ship passengers per year. For the fishing industry, we're assuming that tax revenues from that industry will recover over a 5-year time horizon. And then for the mining industry, we use futures market to inform our mineral prices outlook. We're not building in any major new mines into that forecast. Slide 6 is our fun graphic for the visual folks that looks at total state revenue from different sources and puts that into individual terms. With having no statewide sales tax or personal income tax, the state's revenue is really concentrated in federal funds, investment earnings, and petroleum revenue. And for fiscal year 2024, out of the state's $16.3 billion of total revenue, those three sources accounted for over 93% of state revenue. All other sources were a little over 7% of revenue. Obviously, important to the state economy and employment, but in terms of state revenue, it's really concentrated in those three major sources. Slide 7 is the similar graphic with our forecast for fiscal year 2025. Once again, concentrated in federal investment and petroleum revenue, with all other sources forecast to contribute just under 9% of total revenue in fiscal year 2025. So now diving into the numbers itself, starting with a high-level summary of the unrestricted revenue forecast for the next couple of years on slide 9. So our oil price forecast compared to the fall forecast that was released in mid-December, our oil price forecast was increased by 62 cents per barrel for fiscal year 2025. and then decreased by $2 per barrel for fiscal year 2026 to that $68 per barrel for fiscal 26. And this reflects the most current information we have about actual prices so far in fiscal year 2025, as well as updated outlook from futures market for the remainder of fiscal 25 and fiscal year 2026. We did check in on the futures market as we were getting ready to come up to the table, and the forecast for fiscal year 2026 would still be right around that $68 if we were updating those numbers this morning. For oil production, similar production volumes for fiscal year 2025, there was a 200 barrel per day increase to that forecast, and then a modest 5,400 barrel per day decrease to the fiscal year 2026 forecast. The permanent fund transfer to the general fund, given the way that that is calculated based on the first five of the last six fiscal years, that transfer was known, and so there is no change to that particular part of the revenue forecast. And then in terms of total unrestricted revenue, as the commissioner mentioned in his opening remarks, essentially no change in fiscal year 2025, less than $1 million total adjustment to the forecast, and about a $70 million decrease to the unrestricted general fund forecast for fiscal year 2026.
And the change in FY25 of 0.4, is that because we're so far into the fiscal year?
Chair Hoffman, there, looking at the fiscal year 2025 numbers, there were a variety of changes on different components of the revenue forecast. It's kind of a coincidence that it all balanced out to essentially zero change. But that the number does incorporate the best information we have for collections for the first 7 months of the fiscal year.
Thank you.
So slide 10 shows our total state revenue from all sources and all designations of funds for fiscal year 2024 and our forecast for fiscal 25 and 26. In terms of total state revenue, the state received about $16.3 billion in fiscal year 2024, and we're forecasting $17.4 billion for fiscal year 25 and $15.9 billion for fiscal year 2026. And this is broken out into the four categories of restriction, with unrestricted general funds being those revenues that can be appropriated for any purpose and are typically the focus of most of the budget discussions. Then we have the designated general fund revenues, which are those revenues that are technically available for appropriation but customarily used for a specific purpose. Other restricted revenues are revenues that are truly dedicated in how they must be used, and there is very little, if any, discretion around those revenues. And then federal revenues all have different restrictions placed on how they can be used when they come from the federal government. So those add up to the total revenue. And then for the remainder of the presentation, we'll focus on that unrestricted general fund portion of the revenue, beginning on slide 11, which just breaks that out into the three primary sources, which are investment, petroleum, and other non-petroleum revenues. So the investment revenue was the primary source of the largest source of unrestricted revenue. Contributed about $3.7 billion in fiscal year 2024 and expected to contribute $3.8 billion in fiscal 25 and $3.9 billion in fiscal 26. And the next, petroleum revenues generated about $2.5 billion of unrestricted general fund revenue in fiscal 24, and we're forecasting that at $1.9 billion in fiscal 25 and $1.6 billion in fiscal 26. And then lastly, other non-petroleum revenues forecasted to contribute about $574 million of unrestricted revenue in fiscal 25 and a little over $600 million in fiscal 26. And the next couple of slides, again, walk through each of these three sources of revenue in a little bit more detail, beginning with the unrestricted investment revenue on slide 12. The permanent fund transfer contributed $3.5 billion in fiscal year 2024 out of the total of $3.7 billion of the unrestricted investment revenue, and that permanent fund transfer is expected to be $3.7 billion in fiscal 25 and $3.8 billion in fiscal 26. With the remainder of the unrestricted general fund investment revenues being primarily earnings on cash balances of the general fund. Slide 13 shows that estimated transfer from the permanent fund to the general fund for each year through 2035. The forecast is based on, again, a 7.65% long-term return assumption for the fund and a draw or percent of market value transfer of 5%. And that 5% is based on the ending market value for the first five of the last six fiscal years. So it's a trailing average. And other assumptions include the just under $81 billion fund value at the end of January, which was used as the basis for the projection up on the screen here. Slide 14 walks through the unrestricted petroleum revenue forecast. The four main sources of unrestricted petroleum revenue are the oil and gas production tax, which is the state's severance tax on petroleum, the corporate income tax, which applies to C corporations doing business in the state, and then a petroleum property tax, which the state levies on all oil and gas property in the state. That property tax is only the state share of the property tax. There's an additional over $500 million per year generated by municipalities on petroleum property taxes. In all, we're looking at just under $900 million from petroleum taxes in fiscal year 2025 and just under $800 million in fiscal year 2026. And then the oil and gas royalties are actually the largest source of petroleum revenue to the state. Currently brought in about $1.15 billion in fiscal year 2024 and forecasted about $990 million for fiscal 25 and $857 million for fiscal year 2026, respectively. And these royalties numbers reflect only the unrestricted general fund portion of the royalties. There's an additional 25 to 50% of royalties, depending on the lease, are deposited to the permanent fund, and 0.5% is deposited to the school fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stickel, I notice a bump in petroleum property tax in the current year, but not much in the year to come. I, with a couple of big projects being developed up on the slope, I would have thought that we would continue to see increases in petroleum property tax year over year for a little while to come now. Is there a reason that's such a very small bump from 25 to 26?
Sure. Senator Keel, through the chair. So I would point first to the increase in petroleum property tax from fiscal year 24 to 25. Which is actually, that's a pretty significant increase in the state share. So the way that we forecast our petroleum property tax is we have a depreciation model for existing property. The largest source of the revenue to the state is actually the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, because the state receives a significant share of its property tax from the tax on the share of the pipeline that's in the unorganized borough. We do have an element of the model where we're looking at expected capital expenditures and translating that into an assumption for additional taxable property. But a lot of the large spending for the new fields like the Pica and the Willow, a lot of that comes in the North Slope Borough. So we receive a small share of the property tax, but the majority of the property tax in organized boroughs actually goes to the boroughs.
Senator Keel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up, it's always dangerous to do math on the fly. But $500,000, and we get the state's share is 10% of the property tax on oil and gas property that is within a borough that has an 18 mil tax, which I believe is the case on the slope. So the net with old stuff depreciating, but the net increase from 25 to 26 is, let's see, $500,000, 10% is $5 million bucks?
Senator Keel, through the chair, we have detailed backup for these numbers that do break out the property tax by municipality, and we'd be happy to provide that in lieu of attempting mental math.
Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Mr. Stickle.
All right. So moving on to slide 15, this slide shows some additional detail for the unrestricted non-petroleum revenue forecast. The largest source here is taxes. The corporate income tax in fiscal year 2024 brought in a little over $177 million. We are forecasting $210 million in fiscal 25 and $235 million for fiscal year 2026. Again, as I mentioned in the opening assumptions, the forecast is predicated on continued economic growth, and those projections are fairly broad-based across different industries, as well as incorporating some recovery from sectors such as tourism, which are recovering from COVID-era losses. Other significant taxes include mining license tax, insurance premium tax, fisheries taxes, and excise taxes. And again, as I mentioned in the fall version of the presentation, we did show a negative $1 million for the mining tax for fiscal year 2024. That's an item that that might jump out, and that was a combination of some one-time adjustments, including prior year refunds, as well as a weak base metals prices in calendar year 2023. We are forecasting somewhat of a recovery in prices and profitability for the mining industry going forward. And then other than the taxes, it's a variety of different revenue sources to the state, includes licenses and permits, charges for state services, fines, non-petroleum rents and royalties, and miscellaneous revenues like dividends from state corporations.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stickle, tell us more about the good news on a strong and growing economy. Can you give us percentage terms, job growth, housing starts, business starts? What are some of those indicators?
Sure. Senator Keel, through the chair. So when we talk about economy generally for purposes of the revenue forecast, we're talking mostly about national economy in terms of how that drives corporate income tax and tourism visitation. As we were putting the forecast together, the general assumption is continued economic growth. There has been some discussion out there in the public sphere about a potential for a recalibration of sorts, but we look at earnings projections to come up with our underlying estimates of company profitability, and those do incorporate kind of stable growth.
But at the national scene, I think the question was placed to the president, do we anticipate a recession? And what's your read on the question of a recession, and how does that impact this presentation?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. So the forecast itself does not include a recession. It's predicated on stable economic growth. It does seem like there's a increasing probability, and that's something to watch out for. I was listening to a podcast this morning with Mark Zandi. He's the chief economist for Moody's Economy.com. I think he's now predicting about a 35% chance of recession over the next year. So absolutely something that we'll be keeping our eye on, but for now, it seems like that's not the most likely outcome.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stickle listens to even more boring podcasts than I do. That's saying something. But I promise I wasn't trying to play national politics at the Senate finance table. I'm just interested in these revenue projections. What do they reflect in terms of growth in Alaska's economy?
Sure. Senator Keel, through the chair. Again, so the basic assumption here is going to be stable growth. In terms of population projections, we rely on projections from the Department of Labor, and they do project very slight but a growing population base. We assume stability in the tourism sector at the very high levels. We assume continued operation and development at the major mines. We assume expanding business profits. The one assumption to point out does have to do with fisheries industry. Fisheries industry has suffered quite a bit the last couple years, and we don't have any crystal ball to see exactly how that's going to play out. What we did for the fall revenue forecast is we touched base with several different stakeholders in and outside of state government and kind of came to a consensus that a five-year time horizon for recovery in revenue was reasonable. The consensus also was that probably isn't necessarily reflective of the time horizon for recovery of the economic impacts to the fisheries industry. So that industry is likely to continue suffering. But hopefully that answers your question. And the Insight Economics podcast is fascinating.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, we'll see if I can add that one to the list. There's only so many podcast hours in the day. It's just intriguing to me, Mr. Chairman, that with predictions of a growing economy and state, I see $27 million in increase in non-petroleum revenue from 25 to 26. $6.2 billion of state revenue in a stable or better yet a growing economy is good for 0.4%.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Please proceed, Mr. Stickle.
All right, so the final portion of the presentation focuses on some key assumptions around the petroleum revenue forecast and how those have changed from the prior forecast. So slide 17 starts with oil price. This shows our spring 2025 oil price forecast for Alaska North Slope crude and a comparison to the fall forecast. We generated the price forecast using the median futures data for the first five trading days in March. So we generated the price at the end of the day on last Friday, March 7th. And once again, as I mentioned earlier, just glancing at futures market this morning, there hasn't been a significant change to the outlook beyond what's shown on this slide. So the fiscal year 2024 prices came in 62 cents a barrel above. Fiscal 25 prices are coming in 62 cents per barrel above the fall forecast at $73.86 per barrel. And then the fiscal year 26 price was reduced by $2 per barrel down to $68 per barrel, and generally have prices remaining stable in that mid-60s to just under $70 range over the time horizon of the forecast. Slide 18 compares that forecast to some other sources of forecasts, and we updated this chart at the end of the day on March 11th using data from March 11th. We used that day's futures prices for Brent crude. The latest projections from the U.S. Energy Information Agency, which were released on Tuesday of this week, as well as an average of analyst forecasts. And generally, our forecast is in line with those other sources, and all suggesting a most likely price in that mid-60s to around $70 range for the next several years. Slide 19 is our updated sensitivity analysis showing how revenues would change if prices don't come in exactly as forecast. Again, with our forecast oil price for fiscal year 2026 of $68 per barrel, the unrestricted general fund revenue outside of the permanent fund transfer would be $2.3 billion. And to make things easy on you, the heuristic has not changed from the fall forecast, and each $1 change of ANS or Alaska North Slope price above or below that forecast value is still equates to about $35 million of unrestricted general fund revenue.
So this reduces the revenue from the current year by how many million?
Chair Hoffman, so the oil price forecast was reduced for fiscal year 26. Compared to the fall forecast, we reduced the oil price forecast by $2 per barrel, and we reduced the unrestricted general fund revenue forecast by $70
million. Thank you.
Slide 20 looks at North Slope oil production and shows our forecast for that for the next decade, as well as a high and low case. This production forecast is prepared primarily by Department of Natural Resources, so they would be the ones to go to for any nuanced questions about the forecast. But generally, the story here is stability for the next several years as natural declines in the mature existing fields are offset by additional drilling and development in those fields. And then once we get to 2029, 2030, and beyond, we start layering in assumptions for increases in production as new fields like Pikka and Willow come online. Slide 21 shows a comparison of that updated spring 2025 production forecast for the North Slope to the fall forecast. Department of Natural Resources incorporated the most recent production information by field. We did touch base with the key operators and incorporated updated information for drilling and development at the different fields. We did not change the list of projects that were included in the forecast itself. That's something that we do once per year in the fall. But generally, as slide 21 shows, the very minimal changes overall to the production forecast compared to the fall forecast. Slide 22 shows our history and forecast for allowable lease expenditures. These are the capital and operating costs for the North Slope, the cost of doing business for the oil companies. Capital expenditures were $4.2 billion in fiscal year 2024. That represented a high water mark. And we're actually expecting an increase in fiscal year 2025 and then continued high levels of capital expenditures stabilizing at around $3.4 billion per year. This big increase in fiscal year 24 and then for the next several years, that represents the large amounts of spending to bring fields like Willow and Pikka online. So there is a lot of activity happening on the slope right now and a lot of money being spent. And then looking at operating expenditures on the North Slope were $2.9 billion in fiscal year 2024, and we are expecting a general modest and stable upward trend in those operating expenditures based on general cost inflation, as well as those new fields come on into production, there's an additional cost that goes into the operating expenditures projection there. Finally, slide 23 shows a similar history and forecast for transportation costs or netback costs. Similar story to what we had in the fall forecast here, where the average transportation cost was $10.53 per barrel in fiscal year 2024. This is the total cost of getting oil from the slope through any gathering lines to pump station one, down the Trans-Alaska pipeline, onto a tanker, and then delivered to market, typically on the west coast of the United States. And so you see the three large sources of the transportation cost are the marine cost, the Trans-Alaska pipeline or TAPS tariff, and then a small amount for all other costs. And we are expecting transportation costs to remain very stable over the next decade, actually averaging right slightly under $10 per barrel. The story there is that any increases in cost of operating pipelines and marine costs are expected to be offset by increased throughput in the pipeline. So as you're taking a fixed cost for operating something like the Trans-Alaska pipeline, and you're dividing that fixed cost over a greater number of barrels, it reduces the cost for each individual barrel of shipping that oil. And then finally, we include slide 24, our state petroleum revenue by land type, always a good slide to leave folks with. As we are looking at these exciting new developments, opportunities, and fields coming online, a reminder that the state revenue received from different fields varies depending on where that field is located. So all taxes apply to any production within the state and beyond the state's, up to the state's 3-mile limit. For royalty, however, the royalty contribution does vary depending on the landowner and where that production is coming from. And happy to walk through those in detail if you'd like, or leave this with the committee.
Any additional comments or questions from finance members? We won't go through that, but I want to thank Commissioner Crum and Mr. Stickle for their presentation. The big takeaway from this presentation is that it increases our already substantial deficit by another $70 million. Do we have any closing comments, Mr. Crum and Mr. Stickle?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, this is Commissioner Crum. My only closing comments are that we labored to make sure, by having a set date for doing the spring update, to make sure that we had the most incorporated data into the set. So having the real-time data up through February, as well as the first five trading days of March, it is a pretty robust data set, because we know that both the governor's office and the legislature are looking at some tough decisions here, so we want to make sure you're as prepared as possible.
Thank you. Mr. Stickle, do you have any closing comments before you proceed, Senator Merrick?
Thank you. Commissioner Crum, does the administration have any revenue sources that they're willing to consider because of this new deficit?
Through the chair to Senator Merrick, I appreciate the question. I know that there's been conversations that have been had amongst the Gov Office and the legislature about other considerations. I don't know what is going to be put forward. I can't speak on behalf of the governor's office.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Merrick. Closing comments, Mr. Stickle?
No, sir, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to present the forecast.
Thank you, and thank the department and all the hard work they put into giving this presentation. We wish it was better news, but it is what it is. That concludes the meeting today. Our next meeting is tomorrow, Friday, March 19th at 9 a.m. here in the Senate Finance Room. We will be taking up major maintenance and school construction needs with a presentation by the Department of Education, the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and Mount Edgecombe High School. Okay. With that, we stand adjourned.